I'm very, very proud to introduce to you SWA, one of the co-organizers of the Congress, and also, and more interestingly for this stage today, the organizer and initiator of the Hill Hacks in India. And we're eager to learn what she learned there, what she transferred from organizing camp, and also the five really interesting people she brought and what their stories are and what their topics are. So thank you, SWA.
Hi. So I start with the story how we all got together, which also includes a bit how we all got together. Then I hand over to Dipanjum, who'll be telling what we actually done at Hill Hacks and how. And Taz will be giving an overview of the Indian scene. And then we have two chosen topics, which is Guneet talking about open data and OSM. And then we have Kiran as the special guest of one of the heads of the Save the Internet campaign, which is up and running in India. Zero rating is up to date there. So let me start. So I'm part of this CCC thing since nearly 10 years, and it's still hard to explain what it's all about. It's about trust. It's about very diverse people being together over years and decades like a family. It's about doing things together, and for some strange and unknown reasons, we all have the urge to do these things. You might know that all these CCC things are done voluntary for more than 30 years. Back then, the Congress was a few hundred people. Nowadays, we have more than 10,000. And from those 10,000 people, there's 1,000 working on that. Some of them for weeks and months and full time. So our currency is not money. There's nothing like that involved. It's all about trust, responsibility, and passion. So I started being in India working for the Center for Internet and Society in Bangalore in 2013, which was the year of Snowden. So I did a lot of crypto parties all over the country. And everywhere I went, people asked me, why don't we have anything like CCC in India? And I was just like, why not? Just go ahead and do it. After a lot of talks later, I realized that there is no place where people meet. There is no get together of everyone who's involved in this. There is a huge tech crowd in India, very active, but incredibly fragmented. The scene here, there is no distinction between hacker, coder, and maker and activist because we are together for so long. Like a family, all those decades, and still getting along with each other somehow, with this invisible band of trust and passion. Sometimes later, I ended up in Dharamshala in the Himalayas, where I kind of co-founded the hack base there. And the idea to have this unusual conference was already floating around. An event that doesn't work the usual way, where people are doing their jobs because they get paid. But the way, the free and open way, where people are just doing what they love. Because they are curious, and they want to see if something works. So we were curious, and we wanted to see if that works to do something like this up in the mountains. I got introduced to Akiba from Japan, who also had the idea to do workshops of creative thinking with the kids up there. So we merged that into this thing, which we started in March 2014, and we had the first Hill Hacks in October. 2.5 weeks of workshops and school program and peeking into a four-day conference of hackers from India, Nepal, and some other countries all over the world. I think it was 15 countries. So this year we had 1 month CodeCamp, 2 weeks Hillhex, again a 4-day conference, and next year we go for 3 months, April, May, June. Besides the general tech topics, we also are very arty and do music. Those guys also support us for Hack Beach, the next projects down at the beach. And it's the same approach as we have on camp. Everyone is just contributing enough so that everything works all together. Because we believe in freedom and independence, because we want to be free and independent, because we are free and independent. It's a bunch of very intelligent people coming together and exchanging thoughts and connecting, building, creating and breaking. Working in a meritocracy where everyone has pseudo. Independent from any cultural background, if people just belong to this open information society and they are used to make self-motivated projects, they can do exactly what CCC does since 30 years and what we have done now since a year in the mountains. And we invite everyone to do the same. And we do it again at the beach in November in South India. So yeah, we invite everyone to do the same at home or in any other spot in the world where you would like to have it. And we invite you for Hillhex next year, April, May, June. Peak time is end of May, beginning of June. And we invite you for Hack Beach, which is in October, November. Peak time is mid-November. And for the Germans, we also made a eingetragener Verein. So there you can also come together and support us. Yeah. Now I'm handing over to Debanjum. And also, I want to invite you to the BER party afterwards. For like if you want to talk to us. And tomorrow at 1 o'clock in those sheds in that corner, those guys and another bunch of people will be continuing doing arts, which will be used, like it will be sold and used for Hack Beach for fundraising. All right. Kiran?
Hi, everyone. I just want to say firstly that it's really great to be at camp this year. Swa was inviting us and I was going someplace and she just said, like, you should stop over. And it's really great to see all the insane and inane stuff people are up to over here. I'm going to talk a bit about Hillhex, what we're doing and how we're doing it and all the insane and inane stuff we're trying to do over there. So I'll start off with my story and how I got involved with Hillhex. So it started off last year. I was just ending with my research internship and I had this idea in my head to go to the hills with my laptop and get some internet connection or something. One of my friends told me about this hackerspace in the mountains. And so I contacted them and they said that we are having this event called Hillhex, and if you can come and volunteer for it, it'd be great. So that's how I started off working on Hillhex. It was by next month we had started working. There were 3 of us full-time volunteers, and basically I packed my bags and I reached Dharamshala, which is this is the place where we are at. So I'm going to start off with the story of how. So we've done 2 Hillhex since last year, Hillhex 1 and Hillhex 0. Hillhex 0 is the first one we did. And so Swa's coming from a background of CCC and she knows the cultural context that she needs to get in. And while I am into the open source movement and I get the culture, I hadn't actually ever hosted an event like this before. So she helped us get into the zone of what it means to be doing a community-run driven event and stuff like that. But it was really great. So we started off, there were 3 of us. Mostly we were doing infrastructural work, so how to get stuff to Dharamshala in the hills, how to get the network working, how to get electricity, water, and a bunch of things like that. But also, more importantly, how to let people know about that we're starting off this event. And so Akiba and Swa knew quite a bit of people, and we did like a bunch of media things and stuff. But we also did this thing called pre-events, we call them pre-events, in which she went around across India. So she went to the major metropolitan cities and went to the hackerspaces, did crypto parties. She also went to Nepal and stuff. And that's how we tried to garner some kind of interest into what we're doing over here. Taz is going to talk more about like hackerspaces and the general scene in India, but just to say that we were trying to get a more broader set of things into a conference rather than just one Ruby conference or one JavaScript conference. We wanted people to be coming from tech, but we also wanted people to be coming from arts. We wanted people to be interested in both the intersection of technology, art. And so as we went on, it was really interesting because I don't know how the CCC thing worked out at the start, but for us, when we started off, there were three of us and there were a bunch of people who were helping us out. So there were Arl and Alice, I don't know whether they're here or not, but they helped us out with the infrastructure. So like the mailing list and what was the other thing? There's another thing, that wiki, yeah, so Sha. So the website, the wiki was done by Alice and Arl did our mailing list. And so we got help from other people, but there were mostly three of us who were doing a lot of work at the start. And once the event starts, there can't be three people handling the whole thing. So it was really great to see all these people coming and all these people coming out and helping volunteers set up the place, help us get tools, find more people to get like water or food and stuff like that. And it was really great to see that because generally in Indian conferences, either there is a clearer delineation between a volunteer and an attendee. So the attendees come just to attend the talks and the conference rather, and the volunteers are the ones who are running around in the background. But in our thing, the interesting thing was that the line between attendee and volunteer wasn't that much, so everyone was giving a helping hand, which was really great to see. These are some of the photos of, so Akiba, this guy over here, he helped us procure these 40 laptops, which we used for, so we did a school program also. And just to give a geographical cultural context, we are in Dharamshala, which is the place for the Tibetan community in exile. So there, the Dalai Lama sits over there, and there are a bunch of like schools and stuff related to that. Also, the village which we are in is a shepherd village. So the house that I showed you earlier, this place is in a shepherd village. And so we were trying to get education about, awareness about technology and the things that can do with it into these communities also. That was one of the ideas of it. And so while carpentry and stuff, they know, laptops we distributed to some of the schools and some of the neighboring places where the kids could learn Scratch or some other programming language on them. And we also taught them. So we got them to our places and got them interacting with all of us and stuff.
So which is, yeah, some of the photos. So this is kids hula hooping. These are some of the people who came and this is the mountain treks they did. And so, yeah, so that's how Hilax Zero happened, which was last year, October. Hilax One was much more simpler because we'd gone through the process once, and so we knew the basics of how to go about it. But we still needed to, so the general procedure is to find a piece of land and then how to transport stuff up there. Because in the hills, the roads are pretty tiny, and so you have to account for all of that into your picture. So this time, second time around, we got a much bigger and nicer place than the previous time, where we had a camping ground and we had a good view of the hills and stuff like that. So this is everyone helping out setting up the place. Yeah, so there were, so I'll give statistics a bit later, but the second time around, so basically the first time around we did get, I'll talk about the funding. So the first time around we did get funding from LNET and Network the World and a bunch of people, but, and the Web We Want Foundation and stuff. But the second time around we didn't need money because there was a ticketing system we had and we'd got enough money to use it for the next year too. And so, yeah, that's how the funding thing worked. These are some of the photos of what people were doing over there. So, yeah, so the infrastructure was, yeah, there were a bunch of people who came. And so, one of the interesting things I want to talk about is also that while there was no clear-cut way of, like, I also came by just contacting these guys and they said, like, okay, come and volunteer for us. Similarly, there were other people who came into the picture in Hillax 0 and Hillax 1. So there were, the guy who was handling our finances, Hari, he just happened to be this guy. No one wanted to handle finances for some reason. And he was just one of the guys who said, like, I'll do it for you. And so he just turns up, one random guy turns up. None of us knew him. And we like just gave all the finance details to him and all the money to handle, and he did it the next year too. So it's, and there were a bunch of people who did a bunch of things like that. So this is Cherry, there's Tink and Todd from Japan who helped us out with the school program. So the first time around we had a more informalish school program, the second time around we reached out to more schools and stuff, and this was done by their prerogative rather than us telling them to do it, which was really great to see. Also, I'll talk about a bit of the cultural context, the Indian cultural context, in the sense that there is this idea in India that food is served at conferences to them already. And Swa had a big problem with that because over here there is no culture of food being served in the sense that you don't have to pay for it. You just come, you pay for the ticket and you get the conference. Conference gives the food by itself. And so there were these problems, cultural problems between like what she expected and like Akiba expected and what actually happens over here. Also, there's this thing about like travel reimbursement. So the speakers usually get their travel reimbursed, but we didn't want to do that because we wanted people to be coming who were interested in giving the talk rather than just us asking them to come. And so some of the things we didn't do, like the travel reimbursement things, but some of the things like the food thing we did do. And actually, and this is my opinion, it turned out for like a really good thing. It turned out a good experience because a lot of people coming here, so there is this concept of dham. I don't know how many of you have heard of it, but in just like there are these bunch of people sitting together and food is served in like one row. So this happens in temples and stuff. And we did that kind of stuff over there and it was really interesting for everyone around. And so we had an interesting food-related cultural experience, which wasn't expected. So this is, you know, some of the pictures of Hillax 1. This is hair hacks going on. This is a unicycle which people are trying to fix. And yeah, so these were some of the differences which we had to face and we had to work around. I would also like to talk about some of the positives and the negatives that happened over there. So basically, the good things that happened is, so communication, because of Swa and because her knowing the tools and stuff, we started off on a good front in the communication front, in the sense that we had a mailing list, which was a good thing for like public opinion stuff, and we had a video conferencing going on Mumble. We had IRC, so everyone was on it. To talk, and so the communication things were good. Also, it was really great to see like everyone volunteering to put up things and help out with like garbage and composting and a bunch of things like that. So we didn't have to ask for volunteers for like full-time volunteers and stuff. And yeah, so these are some of the pictures. I'm just going to show statistics.
How do you go to the end?
Okay. So just some statistics, financials were, so basically you'll see some of the financials are higher in the first year than second year, because the first year we're procuring a lot of tools, like those laptops and a bunch of carpentry tools and a bunch of things, like food and stuff like that. And the second year it's lesser, but the number of people who came and the duration of days, the number of days we had in the second time around were higher, and our expenses were lower. So basically we became a little more efficient with what we're doing. There is a topic of networks, which Trouble will talk about, and how we set them up, and what were the difficulties we faced with that. So yeah.
So I'm Trouble. I was lured to the hills by having dinner with some friends in Tokyo in March, I think it was. And they said, you know, India, there are hills, there's good food and fun people, and you should totally come. It'll be a nice holiday. It'll be relaxing. You don't have to give any talks. And somehow I ended up running the network. I'm really not sure how this happened, but in the great tradition of people running networks at hacker conferences, I now have to explain how I did it as a warning to other people who find themselves having dinner somewhere, innocently. So I hope the Chaos Network team is here, because I'd like to invite you to come to the next Hill Hacks. It's great food, fun people, and some mountains. So we were up on a mountain somewhere, and uplinks were more up, as in pointing at us. We were up, and they were pointed at us. So the left photo is on the roof of our conference facility. We had two microwave links, microwave, actually just Wi-Fi links, pointing down the mountain. And the photo on the right is slightly down the mountain, and the mountain goes a lot further down, as I'll show a bit later. So mountains, yes. So the air gap was interesting. One of the links gave us about, 30% packet loss and great throughput when it was working. The other link gave us 3% packet loss, but only very little throughput. Well, it always worked. But so I had to go and debug this air gap. And just to give you an idea of the scale of things, the hackers are over there somewhere on a mountain. And further down the mountain, the internet was there and there. And you'll notice that the dish is not actually aimed at the internet. That turned out to be part of the problem. The other part of the problem had something to do with monkeys. The bit in the middle was also interesting. You'll notice our log files were quite impressive. We used an old ThinkPad with a broken battery to monitor the network. A Socrates PC thing I rescued somewhere, or scavenged somewhere more like, to run firewalling and NAT and all sorts of other things. And it was really interesting. So some buzzword soup I have to do. So it was only legacy IP originally, with two local ISPs who were both doing private address space. And they had non-overlapping address space, but by accident, not by design. So they were both using the default configurations of MikroTik and Ubiquiti, respectively. And they were running a /24, each of them, for all of their customers, and just bridging them together. And, you know, what's the worst that could happen? Bad things. Because, I love IPv6 and I have an IPv6 problem, I immediately set up an IPv6 tunnel to Belgium, because I couldn't talk to anyone more local. And the whole thing was running on OpenBSD. It was there before I got there. And it somehow held up quite well. So, of course, Chaos was the inspiration for Hill Hacks. So we had to provide wireless to the tent, which is a bit less organized as it is here. We could actually see the access points, and we put them in strategic places, like in the middle of the balcony. So we were promised 3 outdoor access points. We ended up getting 1. And then someone showed up with a whole boatload of cheap made in China TP-Link access points, which we then spent a nice afternoon flashing with software and then flashing again with new software after we worked out that it wasn't working. A single ESSID on 2.4 gigahertz because that was the only radios we had. And the only optimization I ended up doing was putting different access points in different parts of the sites on different channels to encourage roaming. And well, that did more harm than good, but nobody noticed because monkeys. So if you run a network at a hacker conference, you have to provide pretty graphs. So I spent quality time writing pretty graphs. This is a pretty graph. And I gave every access point a different color. So the blue access point was the eating area. The green access points were downstairs somewhere, orange access points, whatever. But some interesting correlations and conclusions can be drawn from this data. Hackers are apparently nocturnal because at night, all the wireless clients are in the yellow area, which is where the sleeping tents were. We ate together, as the Banjam explained. So hackers like their lunch a lot. So the blue areas were where we had lunch. And we also like our breakfast. You'll notice the time of day we had breakfast. This had something to do with the time of day we had dinner. So, and there was a pattern here, as you would expect at a conference, right? So challenges and opportunities. In other words, what went wrong? Well, in general, when it worked pretty well. And when it didn't work, people shouted or went off to do more interesting things. I discovered, again, that OpenBSD sucks, which is the name of a presentation heading of OpenBSD fame gave at AsiaBSDCon. I did fix some of the bugs I ran into. And a very interesting problem was that both of the ISPs we had, so we had multipath intranet, but both of these ISPs had the same uplink. So when that ISP went down, everything went down. But happily, that only happened once or twice when the power went out in a significant area. So yeah, other challenges. Something about monkeys. We called this the simian interference problem. And I don't think it's ever been seen at Chaos Congress or at Chaos Camp, but we had a number of these individuals, and they were there before us, and they like to remind us of this from time to time by interfering with our infrastructure. We also found interesting electrical problems, like 10,000 amp breakers, which, 10,000 amps, 240 volts, probably not. We also found that if you're running too much power across a thin cable, and you use electrical tape to connect two ends of cable, the tape will melt and start smoking. The obvious solution, of course, is you call a local electrician who will then remove the tape. And that's it. The problem is gone. It's no longer smoking, right? So, that was much fun. And so you think that organizing a conference in a country the size of India, you could rely on a large network of people who have done this before, who've done this networking before. But it turns out that the state of hackerspaces and makerspaces in India is a little bit more complicated than it is in Germany. And Taz will explain now how this works there. And he'll explain how this concept of Juga works, which I can't pronounce, but he'll help you pronounce in the fullness of time. On to Taz.
Thanks, Trouble. I never thought I would be saying thanks, Trouble. So, I want to talk about the state of hacker communities in India right now. And I'm Taz. So the first large-scale attempt at organizing any sort of hacker event or open source event was FOTS.in, which lasted about 10 years. And we found that after that, smaller, more concentrated events were much better received. So the void which was left by Fosh.in was filled in by multiple different conferences, such as Open Data Camp, PyCon, RubyConf, BarCamp, and HasGeek. So that leads to another movement which started in India. So around 2013, we had MakerFest happening in India. And out of that came out a lot of makerspaces. But for that, I have to take a small detour and explain what Jugaad means. Describing Jugaad is sort of a hack, and we've had a long culture of doing this, but it's mostly been in the rural areas where hack happens because of necessities, and so this would be a good example of a Jugaad, as you can see. This turns out to be because of pure necessity. And I have another example of the same thing happening. The hacker culture in India pretty much started in the rural areas and not the urban areas. But like I said, after 2013, we also had a lot of enthusiasm about makerspaces in India. So Makers Asylum was one of the first makerspaces which arrived on the scene. So Makers Asylum is in Mumbai, and they recently started another chapter in Delhi. This is Jaga in Bangalore. This is Workbench, which is another makerspace which started in Bangalore. So, which leads to a particular problem that there have been a lot of enthusiasm about makerspaces, but not enough experience operating and running them. So, one of the solutions which I can think of is sister hackerspaces. People who have more experience running hackerspaces can collaborate and have sister hackerspaces around the world, where places which don't have enough experience or resources. So yeah, that is one of the things which I can think of. And as an example of one of the things which came out of these conferences is the Open Data conference, which Guneet will explain something about.
Yep. Hello. Thanks. So talking about India, the open movement is quite complex, very active, but very fragmented. And I'll dive into two different aspects of the open movement. One is the open data movement in India, and later the open street maps. Open data has been, the movement has been quite active for the last 3-4 years. We have an organization called Data Meet, for which I work for. We facilitate and advocate for open data in different forms, both the government data and non-government data. We have an annual conference every year, which is called the Open Data Camp. It's actually biannual, meaning, I mean, is it bi or semi? I can never tell. Twice a year, once in Delhi, once in Bangalore, and they have followed different themes. This allows us to engage with civil society, government organization, non-profits, for-profits, journalists, social scientists, and other data enthusiasts. And of course, people like tech people, developers, designers are always there. Using Open Data Camp, which was first held in 2012, and since then, every year we've held quite several events around Open Data Camp as well. We've been able to understand how organizations are collecting data, how are they using it, how are they representing it, and sharing it, and trying to advocate for standards of open data in each of these phases. In 2012, the government of India came out with a policy called National Data Sharing and Accessibility Policy, which led to something like data.gov.in, which was in partnership with America, but it worked out really well for us. Not sure what happened to their website. And we have lots of government organizations publishing on this website. The quality of data is a problem, but at least we have a workflow in process. There are data controllers, there's a policy now. But the next challenge is to convert this policy into an act, which will make sure which will mandate all these organizations to do so. So that's, I have some links at the bottom that you can visit later on. Then coming to OpenStreetMaps, DataMeet and several other organizations also support the mapping community. We have had mapping parties going on, I think, regularly since 2013. We also have an OpenStreetMap.in server, which essentially is a copy of the .org one, but has some changes in the map boundary because of unfortunate political issues that the government of India wants us to cater to. OpenStreetMap, since that OpenStreetMap.in has been there, we have quite a few mapping parties going on and lots of map data being uploaded. Recently, during the Nepal earthquake, the community engaged with the humanitarian OpenStreet team's task, and we did participate quite actively. We had several events around it. Following that, we have now a series of events which are called Mapping India for Disaster Preparedness. We have a couple of states that we are focusing on, the hill states next to Nepal, and we've already held two events. Finally, just a couple of names of the organizations. There's GeoBLR, which is Geospatial Bangalore, which has been doing it for a couple of years with the help of Mapbox. And we just started GeoDEL, which is Geospatial Delhi. And that should sum up OpenStreetMaps. I'll now give it to Kiran to talk about a specific issue that India has been battling since the last 1 year, I guess, the issue of net neutrality.
Thank you. So I'm going to step away a little bit from hacker events to talk about what the hacker community is doing. So in India right now, we have an ongoing debate about network neutrality. The definition should be straightforward to most people. The basic idea is you do not block access to anything on the internet for commercial reasons. You do not discriminate on the basis of speed and say some sites are faster or slower, and you do not discriminate on the basis of price, where you say some sites cost more or cost less. Now, this is a principle that's understood worldwide. It's been legislated into being a principle that ISPs must uphold in many countries. Europe passed a ruling, I think, last month. The US had it a couple of months back. India doesn't have one yet, and it's a debate that's been going on for a few months. So the current version of this debate started really in December last year, and I don't know if you can see the date on this article. It's December 24th. Nice day to say you're going to screw your customers. So Airtel, which is India's largest telecom operator, announced on December 24th last year that if you use WhatsApp or Skype from your phone, you're going to pay extra, which is a clear violation of network neutrality. And their explanation was that if you're using WhatsApp to make phone calls, then you're not using your phone network to make phone calls, and therefore they're not getting paid enough, and they can't maintain the network if they don't get paid for phone calls. So this They hoped by putting it out on December 24th, nobody would notice. Everybody's going to be on holiday on 25th. And it would be a little too late for the media to take action. Thankfully, we had some people who decided that the holidays were not as important as stopping something like this from happening. So this happened. And this caused enough of a furor in the country that people started making jokes about what they'd charge you for next. So you want to buy something on Flipkart. Flipkart's an e-commerce site. They're going to charge you more to get to the checkout page. You want to hire a cab? Your telco is going to charge you a charge for hiring a cab, you know, because if you're giving somebody money, why can't they take money? So this was a huge trend. Lots of people making jokes about the telco on December 25th. It caused enough of a ruckus that the government had to come in and say, let's figure out what's going on. And as it turns out, this is what Airtel actually wanted. They wanted the telecom regulator to make this legal. So the telecom regulator in March of this year put out a consultation paper saying, asking about how to regulate over-the-top services. Now this is a paper that was spread across more than 100 pages. This is a public consultation. They wanted public comments on the proposed legislation to regulate over-the-top service providers, which basically means the entire internet. They asked the public to respond with answers to 20 questions, which were obviously worded in a way that nobody understood anything about it. So a bunch of us figured that this was the time for doing something about this. So we started a campaign which we called the Save the Internet campaign. This is not the site that was launched. What we did instead is we recruited a diverse group of individuals to come together and do something about this. So we got a bunch of lawyers to decode what the consultation paper said and write legal answers to them. We got a bunch of other people to do various things to promote it. And we put up a site that made it extremely easy for anyone to mail the regulator. We had the lucky benefit of a very popular comedy group producing a video about this. I'm going to play a few minutes of the video, not the entire thing. So let's see if this works.
Let's give credit where it's due. Right. Telecom operators have done plenty for this country over the last decade. They've allowed your charger to send in dirty SMS jokes all day long.
They've even tried to convince you that Hare Ek Friend Zaruri Hota Hai.
You know what? Hare Ek Friend Zaruri Nahi Hota Hai. Some friends are matlabi and are only your friends because they want to play FIFA and you're the only person they know who has an Xbox. So tell your pretend friends to. Anyway, the point is, if you're one of those three people in the country that actually likes your telecom operator,
because we finally have something that will push you over the edge.
Because right at this very minute, India's telecom companies are lobbying the Telecom Regulatory Authority of India to enact a regulation in a way that will change the way Indians are using the internet forever.
These telecom operators are going up to something that's called net neutrality.
What is net neutrality and why should I care?
Net neutrality means one.
So, you should watch this video. It's about 10 minutes long and it's fairly funny. It's also extremely informative. It was legally verified. We had a lawyer look at everything they wrote and said and made sure it was completely valid technically. So this video went up on April 11th of this year. You can see it's got 3 million views so far. It had about the first million within the first week. And at the end of the video, they ask everyone to go to the website and say, do something now.
So, what's at stake here? Your right to use the internet as you have been for the last 20 years.
As an Indian netizen, here's what you should demand. Freedom. You'll be able to access information or entertainment on the terms you choose.
Not to be pushed into consumer decision by
the link in the description or on the I button.
Basically, it ended over this.
It's worth it, we promise. Don't subscribe, don't like, guys, just send the email, do what we said. You know, if you want to not be ripped off by a telecom company or your ISP, just be do it. Just go, you need the internet. If you don't click, you will not, this will not happen very often. 24th April, 24th April, TikTok.
Stop waiting, mere baari ka halat hai, like 4 baje ye shoot hua hai din mein, like seriously.
Yes.
would be on the street.
So, this video worked. Over the course of 1.5 weeks, 1 million people mailed the regulator. Now, 1 million people is something that is, first of all, unprecedented worldwide. The only case of someone doing more than this was in the United States. But in India, the last time the telecom regulator actually got public comments was in 1998, and they got about 15,000 comments. And this year, they got 1 million comments. It caused such a ruckus that this was all the country could talk about for 2 weeks. And to help make this work, we put out a Twitter bot that kept a live count of how many emails had been sent every half an hour. So it's obviously not active anymore, but you could see the countdown happening as we got to the deadline. And we tweeted out a nice graphic. So this bot became the source of news for the entire country. The media would report every day saying that this many people have now mailed the regulator. What's the government doing about this? It became important enough that Parliament took this up. So it went up for debate in Parliament. The opposition parties decided that this was a great way to pull down the government. And they started questioning the government, saying, what are you doing about this? You know, the citizens of this country are complaining and you guys are doing nothing. So Parliament decided to launch an inquiry into this. The Department of Telecom, which is the government's department that oversees telecom, they're not the regulator. They sit atop the regulator. They decided to do their own public consultation. And so essentially what happened was, it was the telecom regulator doing a consultation, clearly biased. We managed to subvert their process, got the public involved. The Department of Telecom decided that they needed to investigate what was going on. They put out a report, it's very interesting. And the Parliament decided that they also wanted to investigate this, so they started their own consultation process. That's still ongoing. And so one of the things we discovered while looking at TRAI's consultation paper is that they in fact had faked a lot of data. So they quoted an article from The Economist claiming that The Economist says net neutrality is not good. And this sounded so extremely unusual that we had to go look up the article they were quoting, and it turns out that they rewrote the article. So we did a diff. What they said and what The Economist actually said. And so we reported it, they published it. This is basically what led to the Parliament stepping in and saying, okay, let's figure out what's going on here. We had a whole bunch of other guys get involved. So cartoonists started doing this, putting out various cartoons about net neutrality and what it was. This campaign essentially, this is how we got to 1 million people, you know, participating in this. That we were extremely public about identifying what the regulator had done wrong. We made sure everybody had access to all information. We made sure we were factually correct all the time. We made sure we appealed to the masses by, you know, enlisting popular movements to speak up on our behalf. And this worked fairly well. Now, the regulator, for what it's worth, kept their word and said they will acknowledge every comment that was received, and they put everything online, including the email addresses of people who sent them email. So this basically killed the spam database business in the country, because 1 million of the country's most active users are now suddenly public. So we managed to scrape their entire site and built a site, a search engine for this. So if you read this off the regulator's website, it's really horrible. It's extremely hard to make out what they're saying. This is what the view comment section is, and this is how it works. You have comments, it's a PDF document, and in the PDF document, they say comments from other stakeholders, and that links back to every email that's received. And there you go. It's got everybody's email address. And it's a horrible interface to browse stuff because you can't figure out what's going on here. So our website essentially is a search engine. You can type an email address or type a name and it'll tell you what they said. And it's a fascinating database because all kinds of random things are here. There are wedding invitations in this, randomly sent to the regulator. There are love letters to girlfriends in this. All kinds of things accidentally sent to the regulator is also public. Once that happened, the Department of Telecom held consultations. I attended one of them, and it turns out that they're fairly intelligent people. You know, we sat face to face with them, we talked things out. They completely, perfectly understood what was at stake and what we were arguing for. And yet they put out a very, very muddled paper. They came out with their final report, and they quoted the Buddha and said, "The Buddha's middle path is how we shall proceed." So among the suggestions they came up with, voice over IP is really good for society. We are not going to interfere with it. We should allow it to be used and encouraged and so forth. But we are worried that telecom operators will lose revenue. So domestic voice over IP should be regulated. I sit back and think, this, how do you know a voice over IP call is domestic? I mean, how do you know where the IP address terminates? How the heck are you going to regulate this? You know, either you block voice over IP or you don't block it. But you can't identify a domestic call on voice over IP. That's not how the protocol works. So we don't know what they were thinking. But they put out a call for comments again and gave August 15th as a deadline, which was today. So if we went back to AIB and said, please help, and so they made this. This video went out yesterday.
Previously on Save the Internet.
Okay, so most of that did happen, but here's what did happen.
TRAI ने आपके 1 मिलियन ईमेल एड्रेसेस अपनी वेबसाइट पे खुले रिलीज कर दिए ताकि आपको दुनिया भर का कचरा स्पैम में आ सके. सो वेल डन TRAI, वेल डन.
सेकंड ऑफ ऑल, आफ्टर पीपल स्टार्टेड ईमेलिंग ट्राई, COAI डिसाइडेड टू सेंड आउट दिस वेगली वर्डेड SMSs दैट सेज COAI सपोर्ट्स सबका इंटरनेट. आई बिलीव दैट आई शुड हैव द राइट टू चूज व्हाट आई वांट टू एक्सेस ऑन द इंटरनेट. टू सपोर्ट, गिव मिस कॉल. ओके, A, that message is so vaguely worded that a lot of people who got it thought it was pro-net neutrality. And B, when you word it like that, who the hell is going to say no? In fact, you know what? Let me fix that message for you. It should be, COAI supports mere baap ka internet. If you believe the telecom operators should have the right to decide what you can and cannot access on the internet based on who gives them money because they love money, then give a missed call to support.
But good news, telecom operators and platforms like Facebook say they support net neutrality.
But wait, if everybody supports net neutrality, then we won, right?
We won! We won, right? We won!
Yes, we won!
No, we didn't.
Fuck!
Here's what's really happening. Facebook and telecom operators are trying to change the definition of net neutrality. They're trying to define net neutrality as everyone being able to access the internet. Whereas the truth is, actual net neutrality means anyone being able to access everything on the internet.
Also, if we're just changing the definitions of things to suit our own convenience, I've got one. I hereby declare that asshole means pineapple. So all I want to say is, you're a pineapple, and you too are a pineapple. Also, pizza tastes terrible with asshole on it.
Telecom companies are using products like Airtel Zero to push the concept of zero rating. Now, what is zero rating? Zero rating is basically a way for telcos to give you certain services and apps for free just because the services have partnered with the telcos.
Okay, now suppose ki AIB ne aapke telecom operator ko aake paise de diye aur bola ki hamare sare videos free mein dikhao logo ko, yani ki jab wo video dekhenge AIB ka unhe data charge cost nahi hoga. Now suppose kuch log hai jinhe superwoman ka videos dekh rahe hain, lekin jab wo superwoman ki video pe click karenge to unka operator kahega ki iske liye aapko paise dene padenge, iske liye aapka data charge hoga. Naturally, over a period of time log free video hi dekhna chahenge. People will want to use the free app. Now imagine koi aur video creator, news website, music app, they all want to get on this platform but they can't because telecom operators unse paise mang rahe hain.
What will they do?
Facebook is also doing something similar with internet.org. While they aren't charging people money to sign on and become partners, what they are doing is creating a walled garden of select apps and services that people can access for free. But if you try to leave this garden and go on to the rest of the internet, you get charged.
Again, aap to sirf free wala app choose karoge na. Imagine if something like Orkut was zero rated on a platform like internet.org or Airtel Zero 10 years ago. There would be no Facebook today.
Facebook isn't trying to protect your rights. Facebook is just trying to make sure that there will never be another Facebook again.
Which is why we decided to put this video on Facebook.
Social network dekhiye. Jo aadmi apne best friend ka vishwas tod sakta hai, wo tumhara vishwas nahi todega.
Facebook, you're a giant stinky pineapple too. Now for the worst news. The Department of Telecommunications wants to start licensing for VoIP apps. What this means is they want guys like WhatsApp, Skype, Viber to buy licenses for the call services that they offer over the internet. Now if WhatsApp has to pay for expensive licenses, who do you think is going to have to pay WhatsApp for their services? That's right. No more free domestic calls on WhatsApp.
Also, licensing is subjective, time-consuming, and will have to rely on some random government babu sitting in some office approving your apps.
हम बस यहाँ बैठे-बैठे बोलते रहते हैं innovation होना चाहिए, digital India होना चाहिए, लेकिन क्या फायदा इन सब का? वहाँ पे हम लोग बस सत्य ने डाला और सुंदर पिछाए की फोटो के देख के ताली बजाते रहते हैं। यहाँ पे लाइसेंस की चक्कर में हमारे गोयल और बंसल तो बनने से रहे।
Also, you want to rely on a babu for internet knowledge? This is the average babu's idea of internet knowledge.
अब जो नया उपयोग आ रहा है उसके अंदर आपको सिर्फ एक कंप्यूटर के अलावा जहां पर आप उसको कनेक्ट कर सकते हैं क्लाउड से, उससे आप सारा सॉफ्टवेयर और आपके सारे डॉक्यूमेंट्स आ जाएंगे। अभी तक ये स्टडी नहीं हो पाई है मनीष जी कि क्या बारिश के समय, क्या जब अंधड़ आता है, क्या इसके अंदर एबरेशन आ सकती
है? अमेजिंग साइंस।
सो व्हाट कैन यू डू?
That was an actual government official. That was the income tax commissioner. His idea of cloud computing, you know, it's up in the clouds and it rains and you don't have internet. So for what it's worth, the debate has shifted. Now it's the Department of Telecom inviting comments. This video managed to crash their website. So hopefully I got the right account. Oh. Okay, I have the wrong account. It's Mr. Akhilesh Mishra, right? So for what it's worth, this person runs the website at which they're taking comments this time. He's a government official, and he's honestly very pleased with this video because finally somebody's paying attention to his website. And so, recognizing overwhelming interest in contributing to net neutrality debate, they've extended the period for comments to the 20th of August. You know, the deadline was today. They've received some 15,000 comments in one day, and they figured, okay, they're going to push it by a few more days so that more people, you know, actually use the government website. So this is not the end of the process. There is still the parliamentary committee that is ongoing, and they have been holding a bunch of consultations. I went to one of them in July. So I was invited in as a representative of the campaign. They also invited the telcos. They invited a bunch of other parties. What's interesting is last week they called Google and Facebook. Google did not show up. So it's very interesting. You know? So Google supports net neutrality in the US, but not in India. Facebook supports net neutrality in the US, but not in India. Twitter supports net neutrality in the US, but not in India. These three parties essentially say something in the US, something else in India. I can show you what they actually do in India. So I have an example, a screenshot I took a while ago. So this is a tweet. I'm not sure you can see the fine print, so I'm just going to zoom in. You see what it says on the first line there? You can see the user is on the Vodafone network. Twitter somehow accidentally assumed he is on the Reliance network, and Twitter is free on Reliance. What does it mean? It's zero rated. Twitter has been doing this for many years in India. Nobody talks about this outside of India because Twitter's the good person elsewhere. They're not in India. So what we've got here now is the parties that you would expect to support net neutrality are not supporting it in emerging markets, and they're hoping nobody notices. And I'm here to tell you that these are not the good guys anymore. So part of what's happening now is that the parliamentary process is ongoing. It'll continue until September. They're still looking for more parties to talk to get, they're going to put out a report. And their report is, because it's a parliamentary report and not a government report, it doesn't really have the effect of being word of law. It's not the government's stance on what they intend to pass as a law. But it's a weapon to use against the government if the government doesn't act. And at this point, what you have is a government trying to not act for as long as they can. And while they don't act, violations can happen because there's no law preventing those. So part of what I'm here to request is we need more international awareness of what's happening in India. Anytime India talks about opportunities in the country, it's a good time to remind them saying that, but you do not have free internet in the country. And free, I mean free access, not free of charge. So if you represent an organization, I would recommend you write on behalf of your organization to the various stakeholders, write to the government, write to the Department of Telecom, write to the telecom regulator, and tell them that we need network neutrality. It can't just be a watered-down version because there is no such thing as watered-down network neutrality. It's either neutral or it's not. And it can't be something that you say is not good for India. So that's the appeal. From here, we'll pass on to Q&A. Okay. So Q&A on both this or on Hill Hacks and the hacker scene in India, I'm happy to take them.
Thank you so much, all of you. So given that we have five really interesting speakers here, we thought that we use a few minutes of your time still to do a small Q&A, and after that, you find all those people in the BER village to party with you, to speak to you, and you can pose all your questions you might have. You don't want to pose in public, also there, like go with them together to the BER village. So if anybody wants to pose a question now, please go to the microphones. And I have the first on the right.
Hi, thanks to all of you. It's really wonderful to hear stories from a place that we don't hear enough from in this community. Going back to the, remind me again, the word for hacker.
Jugaad.
Sorry?
Jugaad.
Jugaad. I'm wondering whether that word, if you could tell us a bit more about where that comes from, if there is a stigma surrounding that or whether that's considered, because I heard actually a little while ago, somebody told me that in Cuba, which is another place where people frequently fix things to survive, the word for handy or being able to fix something actually is also the same word as sexy, like it's used to mean sexy in Cuba. And I'm wondering whether there's a stigma or whether it's a positive thing in India.
Okay, so part of the word jugaad, you know, is depending on which class of society you're talking to, has different connotations. Jugaad means a hack, but obviously it comes from a different culture because hack is what you do when nobody's supplying you something that you know there's a market demand for. And therefore, and this is partly the rural problem, that in rural India, you do not have access to services the same way that you do in urban India. And therefore, you're forced to do things by yourself, which includes reconfiguring vehicles to suit your purposes. So there's a hacker sense of jugaad in that sense. But the other sense of jugaad, which is also used when you're speaking in Hindi, is when you bypass an official process. Right? There's an official process which is so bureaucratic that it's ridiculous. And there's a jugaad approach, which basically means that you made you found a shortcut. You know, and that is part of the reason why jugaad has a slightly negative connotation. It implies that there is a bureaucracy problem also here. Yeah.
It's a positive. It's positive, but it implies that there's something wrong.
Yeah.
Ah, jetzt ist wieder an. There's another question on the right.
Yep. Hi. I am a volunteer with La Quadrature du Net, which does a lot about net neutrality in France and in Europe. So first of all, congratulations on managing to get 1 million emails. That's really cool. And the way you did it with getting bloggers and people on YouTube to do that, that's very good. I mean, I'm really impressed. That's really cool. One thing we found, though, is that emails are easy to avoid. You can just set a filter and you can just put them all to junk, which is what some MEPs in the European Parliament have learned to do quite quickly because they get overwhelmed with all the emails. But phone calls are a lot harder to avoid. Have you considered doing the same thing with phone calls?
Let me show you.
Just like what Laquadrature has a tool for that. So you might want to get in touch. There's a thing called the Pi Phone, and you can set it up to do phone calls to the MEPs or MPs or whatever. Cool. But if you did it, it's even better. They also did it in America.
Yes. So we actually did this. I'm sorry, I didn't open the link in advance in order to go find it now. But we actually did a Call Your MP campaign. So it turns out that there is no authoritative source of contact information for parliamentarians in India. The official directory has numbers and email addresses that don't work. So we had to build our own copy of the entire database of parliamentarians. It's not complete. It turns out that we have elected representatives who have no contact information whatsoever, which is very curious, but that's the case. So we do have contact information for most of them, and we put it out. We did a campaign earlier. We took out part of the site because it was slightly confusing to people after the campaign to go in and start doing this. But I'll find the link while somebody else takes a question.
Do we have any other questions, like on open data in India, or OpenStreetMap, or the Hill Hacks on the right microphone? Yeah.
Hi, I have one question. I came here to learn about the Hack Beach. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so, I mean, when we had the idea of having this event up in the mountains, we always said we also have to have it at the beach. So we did it now two times in the mountains, now we're gonna have it at the beach. So some people already down there, we'll be going after them in end September, beginning of October. So they're about to found a hack base down there as well, like a place to stay and live and have the hackerspace. And then depending on what people show up, we'll be having school program and all that stuff as well. So we already have a close connect to a local school, which has this surf and skateboard school as well, which the connection to the skateboards also rise. And the actual tech event will be at the weekend of 15th of November. And yeah, so as it is the first time, we're just, I mean, depends who's showing up. It's in close to Bangalore, so we expect the Bangalore tech crowd being around a bit. But let's see. Does that answer your question?
Okay, so...
Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.
And it's hackbeach.in, but I think it still leads to hillhacks.in/hackbeach with not much more information.
Okay, so do we have one last question until we go to the BR and speak again and a little bit light, with less video on us? No?
Yeah, one comment then on the website as well. I think hillhacks.in still invites you for Hillhacks last time. As usual with the volunteer pages, we all know this from every CCC page you have ever seen. The amount of information is enormous, but you have to find it.
Okay. So thanks you all again that you're here, that you're open for more speaking to the audience, to every participant of the camp, and thanks for all of you who came here at this really late hour to hear about the maker scene, the hacker scene in India. Thanks you.